and welcome to episode number 16 of Investing from the Beach. I'm Chris Hansen, your host. I've got my co-host with me today.
Co-host Chris Lamb.
And we're going to see on this time how many times we can talk over each other. We'll even do it on the intro. We'll make it kind of fun for y'all.
Yeah.
Today, we're going to talk about time freedom or financial freedom. And if you're new to the podcast, for a ton of background on either one of us, go back and listen to an earlier episode. We could do a lot of explaining in the beginning and also in one of the introductory episodes. But quick background, we both have already hit time freedom in our lives. Very fortunate to have done that. I'm about 20 years older than Chris. We figured out one time that I think he was born about the day I graduated high school, which really ticks me off, but it is what it is. I reached time freedom when I was just over 40. He got there when he was just over 30. And we worked at IBM. We were both in sales. We overlapped by a couple years when he first joined in. And we both did it in the stock market. And we built up a tremendous friendship. Very, very thankful for what we've got. And in the years that we've gone through the quest to reach time freedom, there's tons of mental things that come up that you'll discover if you're walking down this path. And we compared notes and we found that we both came to the same realization. 5% of this, of getting to time freedom and maintaining time freedom, is how to do. And 95% of it is how to think. And we see it in ourselves. We see it in one another. And we see it in many people around us that have come to us for help and advice on how to get there. And it's that same 595. And what's interesting is it does not apply just to the stock market. It applies whether you're pursuing this in real estate, whether you're pursuing this as an MLM business, if you're doing this as an Amazon affiliate trying to sell somebody other stuff online, small business owner, entrepreneurship, it is the same thing. It's all about the 595. And so this podcast is where we spend the time talking about the 95% how to think. So today we're going to talk about time freedom and financial freedom, and kind of examples around that. And Chris, we've had a couple of comments from people saying, you guys talk about time freedom, everybody else talks about financial freedom. What is the difference? Why do you so critical about using one term versus the other? How do you answer?
Well, first of all, I don't even think a lot of people talk about time freedom. I think the first time we really have that concept is when we experienced it, right? But before, it was mostly early retirement or financial independence.
Yes.
Something like that. I think when I was, 19 years old, 20 years old, joining multi-level marketing, I think that was kind of sold to us or me, the dream of, actually retiring your parents, not retiring yourself, but retiring your parents first, right?
Interesting.
And yeah, so that was kind of my, that was like my goal, or that was what was sold to me. And then I saw, you keep going until you're 60 something, you just get wealthy. But I didn't see it as you just stop, or I saw retirement as you stop working, you accumulate a largest amount of money and just live off of that. So that's kind of the, I guess most people's normal thinking of retirement and financial independence, but they don't really think about it. It's really about time freedom, is having the choice of doing what you want to do. It's not about, I'm just going to sit there and, twirl my thumbs or something.
Yeah. I mean, I think I know when I was pursuing, I called it retirement because I didn't really know of a better word to when I was working at IBM. And my thought was, cool, I should be able to retire when I'm, plus or minus 40. And my thought was, I thought of it as retiring, meaning no longer working. But when I hear people use the word retirement, or I use the word retirement with people, a lot of times I think their mental image that gets conjured up is, gray-haired grandma and grandpa swinging on the porch, right? And you see the sunset in the background setting. And that is totally wrong, because it is not, you harass me being a little bit older than you, but there's no way I'm swinging on the porch, right? Not even close. And so probably it's not a good word to retire. It's probably more a rewire. Mm-hmm. And with the time freedom, you have the ability to spend the time where you want. We've talked before about having a purpose or something that, that you're striving to achieve. And it's not striving to achieve time freedom. It's you have the time freedom. So now you can go work on that purpose, whatever that may be. And I know when I was working toward that, and then actually when I walked away from IBM, I didn't have a purpose. I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And I look back and that was probably a mistake. I could have stuck around for a little bit longer until I figured it out.
And that's just because we weren't informed.
Correct. Yeah. Right. Just was kind of the blind. And when you say the blind leading the blind, you didn't really have a leader. It was just kind of the blind stumbling along. And, you know, you realize when you get there, oh, would have been smarter to have done it this way. And so hopefully that's another reason for the podcast, is hopefully having, you know, we having made the mistakes or learning the lessons we've learned along the way, we can pass that along to those walking the path coming behind us.
Well, you know, let's get a little bit, if you can give them a little bit of detail about, I think it's interesting, your story after you left IBM. I remember you reaching out to me and noodling on the idea of, you know, jumping into the financial services industry, and maybe even investment banking. Right? Yeah. I think you had explored that with a capital group or something.
Exactly. So when I left, I wasn't sure what I was going to do. One of the choices could have been to go work for, what would you call it, a channel partner. So I had worked for IBM. I thought, if I had to or needed to, I could go work for an IBM reseller. And if you're not in the technology field, the easy way to think about it is Toyota makes cars. But when you go buy a car, you don't buy it from Toyota. You go buy it from Toyota of Los Angeles or Toyota of Dallas or wherever your local dealer is. And IBM has the same arrangement, although they do have places you can buy it from IBM direct, but you can also buy it from a third-party channel. And so one of my choices would have been to call up probably just about any one of them, because you work with them quite a bit, and say, hey, I'm looking for something. I'm sure I could have gotten hired there. But didn't really want to jump out of the frying pan into the fire, so that wasn't a choice. I knew I was pretty strong in financial stuff, so I had talked with you. You've got a relative that worked for a very, very large mutual fund that's based here in LA, and kicked around that idea. And I thought, wow, that's just more of the same stuff, you know, the same day-to-day political stuff. Mm-hmm. And someone had approached me about joining an MLM and even like a little insurance agency, I guess for lack of a better word. And they were selling healthcare benefits, kind of additional supplemental benefits that people, you know, if you're an employee, the employer allows these companies to come in, and it's almost like Aflac. We've all heard the name of the commercials for Aflac. These guys were a competitor with that. And so looked at doing that, tried it for a little bit, and I realized pretty quickly it was cutting into my trading time, so didn't do it for very long. But it really opened my eyes to the thought of financial planning for people that were not wealthy. I mean, these were just, you know, good-hearted, very, you know, hardworking employees of various companies and various government agencies around. And that's where it really opened my eyes to how people think about money. And the challenges, I guess, that go with this from the mental side, where people weren't willing to do delayed gratification. You know, they got a few extra dollars in their pocket, and not too long after that, it got spent on something bright and shiny and new, as opposed to, you know, not eating the marshmallow yet. And so you realize, wow, it's really unfortunate that people do this, but it is what it is. And then about that time, somebody came up and said, hey, I understand, you know, you don't work, you make a living somehow in the market. Can you show me how? And it just kind of steered me that direction.
So while you were roaming around trying to figure out what to do next, how much of the time freedom concept did you understand at the time?
It didn't strike me at the time of it being time freedom, because I was kind of searching for something to occupy my time with.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't, let me sit back and think and, you know, I can get going more. And now that I've been there, I realize there's a huge value to having thinking time. And whether that's reading, and I don't mean reading like romance novels or, you know, whatever, you know, something that is.
You only take a break on Sundays, right, for that?
Yeah, exactly.
The romance novels?
You got it. But it's more of, you know, trying to, I won't say self-improvement, but there are tons of opportunities that are out there in the world. I did a session the other day talking with folks, and they said, you know, if you really stop and think about it, we live in the richest country on the face of the earth, and we're living right now at the richest time in the history of the world, right? You know, going back thousands and thousands of years. And, you know, we personally happen to live right in very close to, one of the wealthiest spots in the country. You got Southern California, you got Northern California with the Bay Area, and you could argue New York and a couple of other spots, but we're in one of the five wealthiest spots with regard to opportunity in the history of the world.
Yeah, everyone's trying to come here.
Yeah, exactly. And when you stop and think about that, and my goodness, there's opportunities all over the place. Why somebody would spend the time or their free time, you know, watching Dancing with the Stars or, you know, anything like that that's, to me, is kind of a time waster, I don't see it. It just doesn't ring my bell, so to speak.
I'll stop watching Dancing with the Stars, Chris.
No problem. Just don't tell me that you're doing it. But you look at the opportunities that are here, both, and it's not about necessarily trying to go, you know, make a bazillion dollars, but whether it's opportunities to be involved, opportunities to learn, opportunities to get wealthy, whatever it is that you want to pursue, we're living at that time in history in the richest country on earth. And for people to say there's not opportunity or I can't find something, they either don't know how to think or they haven't opened their eyes.
Yeah, I think it's more the how to think part, right? Because it boils down to what are you trying to achieve, right? I think, and your philosophies, what your beliefs, what you value in life. And so if you value growth and development and always, you know, striving to be better,
yep,
in those, you know, those areas that are important for you, then you got to constantly put time and work into it. But at the end of the day, you know, you're still balanced.
Yes.
You still have to balance yourself. And we'll talk about that whole balance act, you know, maybe in later episodes, but you can definitely put in time to focus in what you're trying to achieve and get better. And then, you know, if you want to really watch Dancing with the Stars, you can. Just don't do it every single day and make a habit of it.
Correct. Correct.
Because that'll translate into other things that will become, you know, distractions.
The beauty on that too, and just speaking of Dancing with the Stars, it could be any kind of, you know, mindless TV stuff, is now with you know, the Hulus and the on-demand television streaming or content streaming, you don't have to be there on Tuesday at 8 o'clock at night on channel whatever it is, ABC or NBC or whatever the channel is, right? You can choose to watch it at your own leisure. So if you want to watch it at 2 a.m, go at it. And so you don't need to schedule your day around a television program. You don't need to schedule your day around whatever it might be. We've got that flexibility. So,
yeah, that's both a positive and a negative.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, but the, yeah, as long as you're...
Because people end up watching it, you know, 5 times.
Yes, I understand. But, you know, those are probably not the people that will listen to this podcast, so it's okay.
You're right. Our listeners are much sharper.
Yeah, exactly. The person that's thinking that way is not going to waste the time on something about investing from the beach or living that lifestyle. Yep.
You know, it's funny because we've always talked about that. You know, we wonder who listens to this podcast. And, you know, I always assume that, hey, if you're somewhat curious about investing and you care about money, then you got your head in the right area. So we do have a high respect for the people that listen to such type of podcast.
Mm-hmm. So back to what you're, one of the ways that I spin it to people too is to say, you know, think of it this way. Because people say, well, you know, time freedom sounds great. I'm not sure what I would do. Or, you know, they'll ask it the other way, kind of look, and they look at me kind of in awe. So what do you do with your time? You think, mm-hmm. Wow, it's always, there's always something going on. It's just, you kind of look at it like, it seems kind of an odd question. But the way I'll phrase it to somebody is say, imagine this. You know, there was, in the last week or two, there was a very large lottery jackpot, and I don't even know if it was won. But imagine that you're the guy whose lucky number was drawn. And whether it's one of the biggest ones or sizable, it doesn't really matter. But, you know, you came into a large sum of money, millions of dollars, whether it's 2, 3, 4, 10, 20, it doesn't matter. And, you know, after the buzz of the initial shock is gone, and, you know, you take your first year and you go travel the world and get all the crazy stuff out of your system, and you come back and you buy a nice house, you buy a nice car. And now, how are you going to spend your time? You know, what are you going to do? And my guess is, or my assume, you're not going to go stare at the beach and, you know, count grains of sand, right? You got to do something that occupies your brain. And you'd have to learn to manage your investments, right? Because if you put it in the hands of somebody else, it's probably going to end up in the hands of somebody else. And so you have to learn how to manage your dollars. And when I share that with people, they go, yeah, that'd be great. That's what I would do. That's what I would do. And then I just follow up and say, well, why don't you do that now without winning the lottery? You know, if you look at where you are in station in the world, right? If you're listening to this, very likely you've got some dollars to your name. You may not have millions. It may not have hundreds of thousands, but you probably could scrape up a couple of $1,000 if you had to. And oddly enough, that puts you, and maybe even sadly enough, that puts you, you know, a little bit, you're definitely well above the average on a worldwide basis. There's plenty of people that would trade their right leg for having a few thousand dollars. And so you have, in your eyes, in their eyes, you've won the lottery, right? You've got all this money. You're comparing yourself to Bill Gates and saying you don't have very much. But with whatever amount you've got, that's fine. That's your starting point. Learn how to manage the money. Learn how to grow it. And if you learn how to do that with the small dollars, what you perceive as being small dollars, should you ever win the lottery, and whether that means literally winning the lottery or an inheritance or a big stock market gain or a big real estate or what have you, you now have the know-how because you've learned how to manage on small amounts of money. And now all you're doing is you're adding a zero. And it's the exact same way to do it.
It's like trying to be or become a really good fisherman instead of give me a lot of fish and see how long it takes me to consume this.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's exactly it.
Because the ability to know how to fish, that's the lifetime.
Yes.
You will not never starve. In fact, you will continue to have more and more fish.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we hear of people all the time, they're hitting instant wealth. You know, we've got the NBA draft is coming up here in the next couple of weeks. And so there are a number of, you know, I don't know how old they are, 19 to 22-year-olds. They're going to come into the NBA, be drafted, whatever number they're drafted, whatever round they're drafted. Sign a contract that's going to be worth millions of dollars. And today they might have $300 in their checking account. Within the next couple of months, they're going to have millions of dollars in their checking account. And you see the same thing with a lottery winner. What's unfortunate is about the time that after that payment stream stops, it's not uncommon within ballpark 10 years, I think are the numbers that studies have shown, that person loses all of it. And you see that with NBA players, you see with lottery winners, you see the people in the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball, you know, any of these things where people are given a huge sum of money that they didn't have yesterday. And it gets lost usually within about a decade.
Yeah, and they spend it based on payments.
Yes.
They can afford the monthly payments.
Yep.
So they didn't realize they accumulate all these debt and they're waiting for the money to pay for that. And then once the money stops, it's like, uh-oh.
Yeah, the friends all leave and
wake
up time. There was a story in the news about a week or two about a guy named Darius Miles, and he was a played in the NBA, I want to say about 10 years. And if I remember the numbers right, he made north of $60 million over that 10 years. And he lost it all within a few years of ending his career. And he just recently filed bankruptcy. And you hear that and you think, wow, $62 million over 10 years. So in the range of $6 million a year. And I don't know what his structure was. Let's just assume it came in as a stream. So he netted out $3 million after tax a year. And you hear that.
Well, a lot of those times, those guys don't even think about the taxes.
No, I understand. But just assume they did it that way. So that says, All right, so your first year, you get $3 million. All right, go buy a nice $2 million home. You know, in L.A., that buys you a tract home. Anywhere else in the world, that'll buy you a very, very nice place. And now you've got $3 million and you got $1 million left over that year. Now you got $3 million a year coming in. Your housing is covered. You got to cover maintenance and taxes. And that's it. And it's like, it's just crazy. And you think, dude, this guy was not prior to getting drafted. He was figuring how to make a go of it on probably $20,000, $30,000 a year, if that.
Yeah, he would probably be happy with that, right?
Yep,
he would. Coming out of college or high school.
Yep, wouldn't have known any better. And, you know, it's not a big stretch to go from him to the guy that was just as good as him but didn't make it in the NBA. And that guy is now, who knows what he's doing, right? If he went back to school, maybe he's, you know, being a productive member of society. But
he's an investor now.
Yeah, exactly. Or he may not be. And so it's a really, you know, the very, very, very fine line between some guy that makes the NBA and some guy that does not. And, you know, the dollar difference between the two is, you know, multi-zeros. And yet
another example I'm sure you're not aware about on the lottery side. A friend of ours, mutual friend, has a pretty close friend that he knew or he used to do business with, and the guy won the lottery. I don't know. It wasn't, you know, like a huge Powerball type of lottery, but it was a few millions enough for him to, you know, keep going.
Uh-huh.
Or make a difference kind of in his lifestyle. And I guess he went and consumed all these things, cars, homes, right? Kind of just bought them without understanding them. And so I think he came back to our friend a few years later, and I asked to borrow money.
Wow.
Asked for a loan. Yep.
That's right? Sad.
So true. I mean, I, you know, that's as close as to a lottery winner that I know, right?
Yep. Yeah. I don't know anyone that has won. I don't know anyone that I'm aware of that has won it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so.
And that doesn't surprise you. Right?
No. So it points to bottom line, you got to know how to manage your money. And whether you've got millions through, you know, an inheritance, through a windfall, through maybe the company you work for went public and you've got a big chunk of shares, that's awesome. Maybe you're a former NBA player and you got this big chunk of money, that's awesome. I would say just, in fact, there was just a story I saw on the, I think it was on Yahoo today, Alyssa Milano, am I saying that name right? The movie star, mm-hmm. actress, mm-hmm. Apparently got cleaned out. Who knows what the true story is, but money is gone, but got cleaned out by her business manager. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one's pointing the finger at the other, one's pointing, I'm sure they're both pointing a single finger at one another, but they're both pointing fingers at one another. And you hear this from, who's the guy, Johnny Depp and Nicolas Cage over the last few years. These guys get tons of money and have zero idea how to manage it, and they put it off on somebody else's shoulders to let them manage it, to let them
handle it. It's like putting a you know, piece of raw steak in front of the lion.
Yep. You have to learn how to manage your own.
Tell it to watch it. Watch it for you.
Yeah, watch me eat it. So the bottom line is you got to know how to manage your money. And yet, with that, and you've run into this, we've had it happen with people when we've both been talking to them. People will, when you talk to them about this, they'll look and go, yeah, you're probably right, but man, it's really boring. It just bores me.
And yeah, I love the comment that you made before when you said, hey, when you ever anytime you get in a business deal, right, there's usually two people, mm-hmm. right? The one with the money and the one with the experience.
Yep.
And then when they get together, you know, they kind of switch, or they kind of switch experience.
Yes. Right?
It's the one with the experience leaves with the money. The one with the money leaves with an experience.
That's exactly it. So, right. Yeah, two people come in together. Well, usually you get some guy that has no money, comes in to meet a guy with lots of experience, or a guy with money with no experience, walks in to meet a guy with experience. And when they leave, the guy with the experience
gets exchanged.
Walks out the money, and the guy who walked in with the money gets an experience.
Yeah. That's Chris's, you guys don't need to go to MBA school anymore.
Yeah, and you see that over and over and over. And, you know, we all, I'm sure every one of us has been the guy walking in with money, meeting somebody with experience. And my hope and suggestion would be, until you get the experience, stick with a small amount of money if you're going to be dealing with somebody else. You know, learn on pennies so you can do well with the dollars.
So you spent a lot of your time, you realize with the time freedom that you've had or you have, it's better spent building and growing yourself and getting better at managing money.
I've seen that. And yeah, definitely that. And then it's also, I mean, I get great satisfaction of helping others.
And then teaching others, of course.
Exactly.
You know, it kind of fell in your lap. And again, I don't think it fell in your lap. It's just because you were able to build the skill sets like we talked about to allow you. Right, for it to allow it to fall,
yeah,
or to come to you.
Because I can explain stuff well, and finally somebody came up and said, hey, explain it to me. And there was no grand plan that said if I can learn to explain stuff well, they'll ask me to teach them, you know, stock market or wealth stuff or whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it just kind of happened that way, and next thing it turned into something. But it certainly was not part of the grand scheme of things, but it played right into my strengths. And I would say for the listeners, you know, we all have... You may not know what your strengths are, so it's not necessarily a bad thing to figure, you know, for example, I think, Chris, I've used the story with you when you were at IBM, you were thinking of leaving long before you actually did. I think you could have left a few years earlier. And I remember talking on the phone to you saying, you should stick around and develop some sales skills and, you know, try it on somebody else's dime. And so in doing that, right, you develop a skill that you didn't necessarily have before. And you've developed it off on somebody else's dime, and now you have that ability. So depending on whatever you want to do in the future, right, you have that ability to interact, communicate, persuade, motivate, whatever it may be, people. And you learn that on somebody else's nickel, which is, I think, awesome.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, for me, I think it was the excitement of, let me experience what that retirement feels like, right? Or not just that, actually. It was more so of the corporate politics that kind of like, and I don't want to deal with this.
Yeah, I'm done.
Right, exactly. But as far as being ready and planning for it, right, I didn't have the idea of what should I be doing, right, once I, you know, don't work anymore.
You didn't have the purpose either when you left.
Yeah, I didn't understand. Well, you know, I thought about the purpose. I just didn't have it figured out. How was I going to do it? Remember, I think we've talked and I said I always wanted to work with younger people.
Yep.
Like kind of the teenage level, the maybe high schoolers, because I thought that was such an important age, a turning point, a lot of confusion going on at around that age with very little guidance. And most of the guidance that you get through school is just very
weak.
Kind of it's weak. It's a template, and it was created by the school system to sell you more education, mm-hmm. right? It wasn't something to make you the best person that you can be, right? So I don't think you know, at that age you're really given a lot of choices. You're just, this is it. Go do this. Go to school, right? And then figure out a profession to do, and then go work for somebody.
Yeah. Right?
There's not much of a guidance. You know? Yeah. They don't teach you about money. They don't teach you anything about taxes, right? Anything that you know, real life stuff that you're going to need to learn about skill sets.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting a lot, and not picking on guidance counselors in high school, but just generally speaking as a group, a lot of them don't have. I've met a few. I've certainly have not met all of them. So if you're one of them, and I'm poo-pooing on you, don't take it that way. Just making a broad brush statement. Most of them that I've met and that I've heard of don't have real world work experience, aside from working in a school. And so it's kind of interesting. I can't say that I'm surprised that they don't give phenomenal business guidance, if you will, or real world guidance, or what it takes to succeed in the workforce. Aside from kind of a few generic phrases, they haven't been there. They don't know.
Yeah, because it is it's hard to have that, because if somebody has the experience, they typically aren't in the school system. It's not going to pay them, and right, they make way more dollars outside. And those guys typically may not be teaching it either.
What?
Right? So they do it, and they know it, but they don't know how to teach it, or they're not teaching it.
It's equivalent. I know how to swim and I'm a pretty good swimmer. You know how to swim. You're a pretty good swimmer. But neither one of us is at the level that we could give somebody guidance to get them to an Olympic level swimmer.
Exactly. Yep.
Right. And so despite the fact that I've been in the pool and can flail around, that doesn't get me anywhere close to qualified to how to get somebody to the pinnacle of their swimming ability. Not the guy to ask.
Yeah, so it was tough to get that type of direction, but when I left, I had an idea what areas, and then, you know, kind of, I think the whole teaching part just, you know, was attractive as far as, you know, what you were doing. Yeah, it made a lot of sense. So, you know, I like what you're doing. I love, getting the opportunity to, you know, help others, right? So it's part of my you know, life purpose, like I think I told you before, is I look at it from different angles, not just one thing that I'm going to do and that's my purpose.
Correct.
But so part of my life purpose is, you know, affecting and helping others and sharing the information that I know that you know, has helped me to be successful or helped me to be happy in my life. And so if I'm able to share that, and if I can do one way through teaching them about money and how to think, you know, that's I made a difference, right? To me, yeah. And that appeals to the member. I think I touched on the whole leaving a legacy part, right? So it kind of touches on that piece that you want to make a difference, leave some type of legacy when you leave this world or when I leave this world.
Have you ever found in your time freedom chapter that you've been bored?
No way.
Nor have I.
Yeah, and yet, I think if I was bored, I would stop learning the stock market. I think we just continue to do it. It's just, you know, you feel like it's just a part of your life.
Correct. But it has. I've never ever had a day where I'm bored. I may have a day where I don't have much to do, but I'm never bored. And I've had people tell me a couple things. They're like, you know, learning to manage money kind of bores me. Or, man, if I didn't work, I would be bored.
Yeah. Right. Or talking about money bores them.
Yeah. And I, yeah. And you've seen me do it, when you hear somebody say that, I get this little gleam in my eye. And I look them in the eye and say, you know, I've always found that people that say they're bored are boring.
That's true.
And you stare at them when you say it. And there's this usually, and you've been with me, there's an uncomfortable pause while they process what I said.
And I'm sure it's true.
Well, and I'm sure you've thought, oh, they're going to punch him. I better back him up just in case. But then, and they're not sure if I insulted them. I wasn't trying to. I'm not trying to do that. I'm simply saying the truth. And then they kind of get this, oh, crap. He's right.
Yeah, well, only boring people get bored.
Yeah.
So anytime you feel like you're bored, you know, look in the mirror.
Yep.
Right?
It's your own issue.
Yeah, because if you ever meet people who aren't boring, they're never bored.
Correct.
They could just be sitting still by all by themselves. They could be waiting in a patient room, mm-hmm. right, for a doctor to see them.
Yep. Know?
And they could sit there for 2 hours and they're not bored. They may not like sitting there, but they're not bored.
When you hear a kid say, I'm bored, you said this to me once, like, oh, it's really true. All it means is their brain is empty,
mm-hmm.
right? They don't know how to keep their mind occupied, and they need the...
You need some type of entertainment.
Yeah, constant entertainment, stimulation, something to keep mm-hmm. you going.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would suggest for the listeners, you know, think of people you know that have said, I'm bored. And then, you know, give an honest assessment. Don't do it to their face. Just think about it. And most of the time, if you hear somebody saying that or someone you know uses those words, most of the time, and I put most in quotes, it's I've yet to find an exception. Those people are usually boring to be around.
And this is an important how to think piece, because sometimes in the podcast we can go a little more detailed on a certain point, like mm-hmm. boring people get bored, yep. or only boring people get bored.
Hopefully it's not because, boring in the
because
podcast.
Because it is a how to think. Because once you understand that, you learn how to, if you're that person, how do you become a non-boring person? If because all that says is now you're changing the way you're thinking to allow yourself to focus your mind on the things that is important to you, the life purpose stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, then you won't be bored.
Well, and we've seen people that have retired and then gone back to work. And if you ask them why, they say they're bored.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot of examples, a lot of stories around, you know, people doing that. Right? Just getting retired and said, I have no idea what I should do. And you ask them, they're like, I'm kind of bored. I'm looking for something to do. And then I think when I was younger, I hear that. And then you're like, what the? You don't know what to do?
Correct. You can't imagine. Right?
Because that's what everyone looks forward to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But when I was younger, my idea of retirement was, how come you're not going to golf?
Yes.
How come you're not fishing? Like, why aren't you, you know, traveling to Uruguay or something?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, whatever it is.
Yeah, and it actually can be just the opposite.
Or do what Tim Ferriss does, you know, maybe wrestle, you know, lions.
Yeah.
You know? But I always thought you had to do something.
Nope, you can spend the time thinking. Ultimately, you got to do something. You can't just be a hermit. You'll turn into a Kaczynski or, you know, some kind of
Unabomber. Yeah, but, you know, meaning something like dramatic, you know?
Correct, correct.
Yeah.
No. Well, you've got we were talking before about, you know, people that go back to work. Mm-hmm. You got a friend who's folks.
Oh, yeah. 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 Good friend of mine. His parent recently retired. And when I say recently, maybe about 5 years ago. And he probably spent a year or so, like maybe 2 years. And after about 2 years, just felt really bored. Like, what am I supposed to do? I think he initially... went back to work for a little bit for you know, someone, something. And then, you know, got tired of it and then quit. And then, you know, spent some more of his time, freedom, figuring out what to do and then gardening here and there. And then after a while, I got bored and said, hey, let me, I'm going to start up a restaurant. And, you know, my friend and I both know it's not a good idea because he's of retirement age. This is a lot of work. Probably not something he wants to occupy his free time with because it's a time sucker, right? Yeah, there you go.
I can't shut it off.
Chris. All right. I told you this has got to be part of the process.
All right. Keep going.
You can leave that on, huh?
No, keep going. I'll send him a text.
Yeah. And so, yeah, he went back to, let's start a restaurant and realized that, you know, it's occupying a lot of his time. He's about 70 years old. And, you know, you imagine running a restaurant at that age. And just starting out, and he's got to wear multiple hats, and he's working pretty much every day, and morning, early hours in the morning, and then till late night, and so it's all because he didn't know what to do. He was bored.
Correct.
Yeah, and that's not a situation you want to be in when you retire. You gotta. You know, plan for it. You got to understand it. And you and I, right, we think this information is so important because it would have helped us as well. At least we weren't, it didn't take us too long to figure out, right? But it would have been nice to have that information for a much smoother transition into, you know, the time freedom.
Mm-hmm. But I certainly don't want to be opening. If you love a restaurant, cool. I mean, if you love owning and operating a restaurant, that's awesome.
Yeah, don't do it because you're bored.
No.
It has to be part of your purpose.
And, you know, but especially with a restaurant, I mean, that's, if you don't love it, it's the equivalent of jail with a door. You know, it lets you leave every night to go home and sleep. But you got to go back to that jail in the morning. And, you know, some people, there were times when I felt like IBM felt like that. You're like, oh, I got to go back again. Or it'd be on a Sunday night, you think, all right, you kind of prep for the week or prep for the next day. But there were times when it felt like you're having to go to jail the next day. You know, if you're stuck in that position because you're still working toward time freedom, no problem. You got to grind it out. But you don't want to do that because you're bored, right? That is the worst thing.
Yeah, I got another friend who worked at a hospital, and one of the directors there recently came back out of retirement, and you know, he kind of shared the story. He retired for about a year, and the hospital reached out to the director, and because they needed somebody with his experience, they had a hard time finding it. They decided to give him a raise high enough to get him to go back.
Okay.
Right? And so he decided to go back. Right. And he's doing, right. He's been doing this for, I think, a number of years. So he retired through doing that, probably 30 years.
Okay.
Right. So you imagine, and from what I've, you know, heard from my friend that, you know, he's not enjoying it.
Yep.
Meaning he said, hey, it's, you know, this, the system's the way it is, or, you know, he has to play this politics all the time.
Okay.
Right. So, you know, if somebody's trying to play the politics, they're not enjoying themselves.
No, not at all.
Right. Yeah.
And so he's back there. So he didn't, well, let's see. Older guy. He's not like in his 40s.
Oh, no, yeah, he's retiring, and you know, he's in his 60s, late, probably mid to late 60s.
Financially, he's got to be, I assume he's okay, otherwise he wouldn't retire in the first place.
Yeah, it's just more since I don't know what to do, and they're offering me more money because I've worked for money all my life.
Yep.
Right, if you don't know what to switch to, the money is the standard.
So he had no purpose and didn't know what to do with the time.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's got lots of it and doesn't know what to do with it.
Now, to me, that's more of a tragedy because the age.
Yes.
Because if you have time freedom at 30 and you went back to work for something for money, okay.
No problem.
You still have, you know, if nothing, barring normal, you know, life expectancy, you still have time to adjust from there.
You got 60 more years on the planet.
Yeah, right. At 70, how much longer are you going to have good health?
You got it.
And with the stress of going to work, that might take your health, you know, down even further, mm-hmm. right? Faster.
Yep. Yeah, and it's, you know, you think about the, I assume with, you know, life expectancy today, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, most of us are going to somewhere end up somewhere in the late 80s, mid 90s, somewhere in there, just kind of being what is, outside of, you know, accidents or some unusual health situation or whatever you want to call it, some, what's the word, acute, chronic, I guess it'd be an acute disease of some sort. I figure most people are going to make it into their 80s, 90s. And like you said, you know, if you're 30 and you go back to work, no problem. But if you're 70 and you go back, unless you're doing it because you love it, if you're doing it because out of boredom, you know, I'm not, it's not my place to judge.
Yeah. And if you don't need the money, but you're chasing the money anyways, just cause, you have to realize that that money is not going to buy you your time.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
We all have that same amount of time freedom.
We got 24 hours in a day. Every one of us, we get to decide how we want to spend it.
Yeah, and I shared with you before, I mean, you can kind of explain that. It's the X is the point of death, right? Uh-huh. where we leave this planet.
Yep, the day.
And so the day of, and this is, you know, where we are is today. And, you know, you have that time until X. So the more time you spend selling it to somebody or giving it away, the less you're going to have. You can't buy it back. It's not like money. You can make more and more and more of it.
Correct.
Yeah. And so that time is actually going to increase in value, right, exponentially over time.
As you have less of it.
Because you have less of it. We talked about supply and demand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the supply shrinks every day, every time the clock ticks, right? Every moment the supply shrinks.
Yes.
And then the demand grows typically as you age just because of you pick up more life responsibilities.
Correct.
Right? You have more time, right, in this world that you're picking up more responsibilities. You're picking up time suckers, mm-hmm. Right? And so you're going to have more people demanding of your time as well, more things, more people as you age.
So
that's an easy example. I think you can give a lot of that, right, Chris, just observing around us.
Well, it's that most people go and they measure their wealth in dollars. And actually, you should measure it in time. And so if you have... You know, Kiyosaki has this board game called Cashflow 101, right? And the objective of the game is to get enough assets that are generating income such that you no longer have to work. Fabulous game. Really open your eyes to some things. And, you know, once you have the means, if you will, or the assets, whatever you want to call it, that are generating income to cover your expenses, now in theory, you've bought back all this time that you in the past had been giving to an employer. You know, doing the 9 to 5. And so if you have rental property or dividend stocks or whatever it is that you're doing that generates the income, now your wealth is measured not in how many dollars in the bank, but in how long you can survive without the job. And so then back to what you're saying, Chris, about once you get to that point, and then as you get older, you get more demands placed on your time. You know, you're young and single. There's really not much to put on your time. You go work, you go to school, you do what have, that's fine. Now, a few years pass, decide to get married, more time with your spouse. When you spend time with your spouse, usually nature takes its course, and next thing you know, you've got a child. And then you realize, oh, I'd like to spend time with your child. But you've been spending the time on the job, and if you hadn't been learning how to make the money work for you, now you've got the demands of the job, you got the desire to spend time with the young one, you don't have the ability to do that. And as you age, and now you get even more demands placed on your time that comes from other people, right? It could be from the job. It's from your kids. It's the extracurricular activities that your kids do, whether it's soccer or scouts or whatever it might be. As you get more experience in life, demands are placed on you from the surrounding community. So it could be that you might take a leadership role in your kids' extracurricular stuff. If you live in a community where you've got a homeowners association, might get involved with that. You get more demands placed on you from your job. You got to support and, you know, maintain and keep up the stuff that you've acquired over the years. You know, a boat, an extra car, you might have a rental property, you know, just stuff. And they end up, like you said, it's a big time sucker. And you don't have that when you're young. And the beauty of that, spend the time when you're young to learn how to manage the money.
Yeah, a baby is the wealthiest, right? You are the wealthiest when you're young. You have a wealth of time. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so use that time to, you know, spend it on the things that will continue to give you time freedom, or can get you to time freedom the fastest, right? So that you could use that wealth of time that you have now that it's free.
Yeah, not everybody, people hear that and they nod, but I don't think they feel it.
Yeah, I don't think they feel it, or maybe some they don't understand it.
Or they don't know how to get out of it.
Yeah, because you think about it today, you're the wealthiest in time that you can be. Mm-hmm. Every moment that goes by, you can't get it back.
Correct.
And so spend the time as soon as you can, right, to get that time freedom so that you can have your time as fast as you can. Mm-hmm. All right, you think about, you know, don't try to chase Warren Buffett in money. You're wealthier than Warren Buffett in time.
Yes.
He's what is he? He's like mid-80s now?
Yeah, I think like 87, right? Something like that.
Yeah, he's approaching 90. Right? And his partner, Munger, is
north
like mid-90s.
Yep.
Yeah. And so, you know, these guys, although they're the wealthiest, right, they don't have the time that we do. Mm-hmm. Right? They wish they can turn back the time. They wish they can spend their billions to buy back their decades. They can't, even a day. Right? They can't do it.
Correct.
But that's not to say they're not living the way, you know, they want to live. They're living the way they want to live today, I believe.
No, there's a great humorous story about Munger, who's Buffett's right-hand guy. And you talk about, you know, they've got all these billions. Munger was asked a number of years ago, you know, Charlie, now that you have all this wealth, you can buy whatever it is that you want to do, what is it that you really want? And his response back was, the one thing I'd love to have, I'd like to know where I'm going to be when I die, so that way I'll never go there. And the idea, you think about that, it's kind of humorous, but you look at that and go, no matter how many billions he's got, he cannot write that check, right? At some point, the day will come. And so he's got however many days left on the calendar. Terrific. That's what he's got.
And so he's in his mid-90s, so he's doing a very, very good job. Maybe he did get that answer.
Yeah, he might. You never know. I wonder, you could try and sell that to somebody. Chris, there's a way we can get to wealth.
Yeah.
We can start, or wealthier, or whatever you want to call it, that we can start a small little business.
Crystal ball of death.
Yeah. It says, hey, I think that you're going to, you know, if you go to Des Moines, Iowa, you're wherever, you know, some small city in the Midwest, you're going to die. It's like, never go there. And we could just sell that to people.
Sure. And then we'll get, our uniform will be a straitjacket.
We'll have the ultimate in time freedom. We'll have three meals, you know, a cot and three hots, and be in there for the rest of our life. So probably don't want to do that either. The ultimate in security. So as we talk through this, you know, the real point in all this, why are we talking about time freedom? And the reason is because it applies to everybody. Most people don't realize the importance of it until they get there. But you can get there quicker and easier once you're aware of its importance. But you got to start. You got to start taking action. Because then once you get there, once you reach that, and it's not even a pinnacle. It's more of a milestone of the time freedom. Now you got plenty of time to enjoy it. And it kind of ties in perfectly the way we typically close this. The beautiful thing about having time freedom is you get to enjoy things that are uncrowded when everybody else is at work. I use the line Tuesday waves, where if you go down to the beach, whether it's a lake, a beach, or wherever you go, you listen to Tuesday waves and they sound so much better than the weekend waves that everybody else gets to hear. And that, I had a discussion with somebody just a couple weeks ago, and he was off, he'd taken a week off, and he and his wife went into a grocery store at like 10 a.m. on a Tuesday, and he said, it was the weirdest thing. I walked through and there was nobody there. He said, I'm used to going on a weekend where there's lots of people and you're always, you know, you're kind of weaving your way through the shopping carts. And I had never thought about that because I usually do, we're going to go grocery shopping. We'll do it during the week. It never even dawned on me that it's crowded on a weekend, right? And that's an example of the Tuesday waves. So speaking of time freedom, one of the things that we're going to look at doing a little bit differently going forward with the podcast, to date, we've done almost 20 episodes, and we put them out on basically a weekly basis. Going forward, we're going to put them out on an every other week. So our plan is to put it out on the first Monday of the month and the third Monday of the month. So if you're a listener, just look for them on that schedule. And our reason for doing that is we love our time freedom. And the podcast, it takes a little bit of time to do one of these, time to plan it out and time to do it. and we love doing it, but maybe not loving it to the point of doing it every week. And so our objective is to put it out basically every other week. So you'll see it coming out on the first and third Monday. And it allows us to allocate time to other endeavors while we go out and we help people. If you're in Southern California, there are cash flow meetups. You can go find us online. You can look and see where we'll be doing those. Those are fun to do. We do an event. We've done it a couple times. I've done it a number of times. We've done one just recently where we go out to an elementary school and we do a simulation with kids, teaching them the act or the process of venture capital. And so things like that we do. There's a meetup group we run and we show people how to manage a 401k. And so different ways like that where you can try and reach out and help people and just kind of share our knowledge, share our what we've learned and help other people get there. So going forward, keep an eye on the podcast to come out on the first Monday and the third Monday of every month.
You see, Chris runs around quite a bit around the community showing people, you know, how, you know, this very valuable information. And I spend my time teaching a 10-month-old how to think. So.
And your thinking is climb up on the toilet seat. So you got to think this way. You got to think no diaper.
Yeah, but we do have a lot of things we want to, spend our time freedom on that will, you know, meet the purpose of, you know, helping others in the areas of how to think and improving, just the way they think about money and how they're managing their money as well.
So. Correct. And as always, it is all about the Tuesday waves. The objective in getting to time freedom is that you have the time to choose what it is that you want to do. Doesn't mean you go be a bum on the beach. You go do something productive. Pursue your purpose. But the beautiful thing is when you get to the point of reaching that, you'll find that the waves at the beach on a Tuesday are incredible. And our belief is that if you will apply what we've talked about in this episode and in the other episodes in this podcast, you too will get to the point where all you hear are Tuesday waves, and they are fabulous. As always, thank you for your time, and we'll speak to you soon.